For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am a lucky, I guess, honorary dragon this morning because I get to be with all of you. And I feel very grateful and happy. Thank you, Hugetsu, for inviting me to speak. I always express gratitude for my heart and root teacher, Darlene Cohen, whose Dharma name meant Great Spirit, Manifesting Dharma, and that was a perfect name for her. And I always hope to bring her into the room when I give a talk. And I also have to share that when Elliot was bringing the laptop and David was giving me water and Wade was giving me, I thought, this is kind of like Zen down in Abbey. Probably as close as I'll ever come. So thank you all for taking care of me. So when Hugetsu asked me to speak, and I'm also so happy that it's Pride Month and we're moving towards Pride Weekend, she asked me, what's the topic of your talk? So what came up for me is not one, not two, Sangha strength. And I actually wanted to start by inviting all of you to just close your eyes for a moment and bring into your mind's eye and your heart all of the different sanghas in your life that support you, that you're part of. There's this sangha. There are sanghas of friends, sanghas of people we might share something really important. It might be gardening, something that is close to our heart. For some of us, family sangha. For some of us, it's family of choice and family of origin. Some of us have sanghas at work. And I think it's important to really see and take in the many sanghas that support our lives, especially right now with how challenging the larger landscape is. And for me, the LGBTQIA+ sangha is a very important one. So feel free to open your eyes and let's sit with each other and all of our sanghas and notice them and honor them and take in what they give us and give back, turning the wheel of generosity of Dana. And so not one, not two is a teaching from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Has anyone read that or familiar with it or heard of it? And that's a collection of Shunryu Suzuki Roshi's Dharma talks. He was the founder of San Francisco Zen Center, one of the first Japanese teachers and came to the West. And I've always resonated with that teaching phrase, not one, not two, because we bring our individual selves to our sanghas, and that creates the sangha, our sangha. And we also deepen our sangha as our practices deepen, as our commitment to practice, to cultivating all good deepens. For me, commitment to sangha deepens. And so we co-create our sangha as we learn and grow in our own heart minds. And so that's why I realized over time, because we have been planning this for a while, Hogetsu and myself, that theme came up for me today. And I could feel it in this room as we sit together, the strength of this one Sangha bodies, right? This one Sangha body that we create with our individual practice bodies, our individual selves. And that's how we create strength, how we contribute to it, how we deepen and grow our individual strength and our Sangha strength. And I wanted to tell a little story about a Sangha that is the reason that I'm here in Chicago. And it has to do with this Okesa. Does everybody know what an Okesa is? Buddha's robe. And in our tradition, we sew our robes. And there's 5 panels. And the stitches are very small. And I don't know, Hogetsu, there's been an estimate of how many stitches go into a... It's myriad. And when my original Okesa, I fell in love with this material that in a swatch seemed perfect. Perfect. And when it was sewn mostly by me with other hands into an Okesa, swear to God, it weighed 500 pounds. Like I couldn't do full prostrations. I realize now because of this Sangha, which I'll tell you, this Okesa and Sangha, because it was so heavy. I have runner's knees, arthritis, and the combination, couldn't do full prostrations. So I was contacted by a sewing teacher I know. Hogetsu has many years of relationship with Colleen, because they needed help with an organization of sewing teachers in our tradition, which is what I do professionally with nonprofits. And it would be about a year or a year and a half of working together, maybe me facilitating an all-day meeting. And so we agreed that my fee, and I don't even want to call it that, would be a new Okesa and a new zagu, which is the cloth that I bow on. And so there are about, I'd say at least 10 pair of hands that worked on this Okesa, the bowing cloth, the envelope that it came in. And they wanted to UPS it to me. Can you believe that? And I said, no. We have to have a ceremony. And that's why I'm here. Happily, this was a good location for a few people to join us. Couple people on Zoom, and so we had that ceremony Tuesday. That is a Sangha that came together. I became part of that sewing teacher Sangha to support their development, is how they interacted together, worked together as an organization. And they came together, and there were panels that were being, that were flying back and forth into many states. And then there was a sewing sesshin hosted by a Dharma brother and his wife, where the teachers all sewed together to put this together. So if that's not Sangha strength, I don't know what is. And that's why I'm here. And so we all co-create our Sangha, like this Okesa was co-created, like me working with these sewing teachers, we co-created what was next for them as a Sangha of sewing teachers supporting all of us. Those of us who, there are some people who have blue rakusus, some of you will have rakusus. And I feel the sewing tradition is part of our foundation. Whether we have a rakusu or not, no matter how formal or not formal our practice is, we are supported by our many traditions. And I wanted to talk about taking refuge in our sanghas, and what that means. And I think for each of us, there's an individual turning of the jewel of what refuge means for us. And then I wanted to turn to the refuges that we take together, which I think I fell in love with the moment that I heard them. So we take refuge in Buddha, immersing body and mind deeply in the way, awakening mind, before all beings. And we take refuge in Dharma, entering deeply the merciful ocean of the Buddha's way. Entering deeply the merciful ocean of the Buddha's way. And we take refuge in Sangha, bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrances. Aren't those beautiful words? Bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrances. So like our bodhisattva vows, that's rather a tall order, don't you think? Bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrances. And so how do we do that? How do we bring harmony to everyone, free from hindrances? We do that by being together in this room, or together in the cloud. Hello, Jerry. Hello, Irina. Glad you're with us. They're smiling widely, I just want you to know. And guess what? We bring our perfectly imperfect selves together in this room, in ceremony, in the kitchen, maybe chopping things, helping the Tenzo, and we bump into each other because we are perfectly imperfect. We annoy each other. We make mistakes in ceremonies, and then we get afraid, and some people might get a little judgmental. That's not the way to do it. And some people may feel encouraged. Wow, they're leading a ceremony not perfectly. I can do stuff not perfectly. I, Lisa, can really do stuff not perfectly. And that is how we take refuge. We learn together, we grow together, we cultivate all good by how we navigate those bumps and how we bring Buddha and Dharma to life. Because without all of you, I would be talking to myself. So we really need each other. We really create the Dharma together. We embody the Dharma together, and the Dharma becomes a living Dharma by how we practice together, by how we deepen our individual practices with our impermanent non-selves, with our light relationship to ourself, knowing that we're always changing, knowing that this person brings out this part of me. And I really like that part of me. My father brings out that part of me. I don't like it so much. And this person in my sangha reminds me of my Uncle Irving, which is pretty mixed. So we hold up the jewel mirror for each other. And we have the opportunity to see clearly, right? And if it becomes foggy because of what I'm projecting, because I'm agitated, because I'm having a really hard time, my hope is that one of you will say, "What's going on? You seem a little tense. You spoke a little harshly to me just now. It hurt. What's going on?" My hope is that we can all do that with each other, and it's not easy. I'm still learning that. That is cultivating all good. That is a living Dharma. That's bringing harmony. to myself, because I get to see what agitates me through your dual mirror that you hold up as best you can, right? Sometimes I am so kind and skillful, I can't believe it. You can tell what I need to work on, right? Practice with. And sometimes not so much. And I hope whoever I'm interacting with, whether it's a member of my Sangha or a friend or my spouse, will say, can we take a step back here? Take the backward step and just take a look at what just happened. That's how the Dharma becomes a living Dharma. That's how we begin to embody our permanent non-selves that are always changing and get to see, to experience those changes and maybe catch when we're agitated or triggered and see, oh, that has to do with this. Not Hogetsu or Elliot or whoever I might be reacting to or projecting onto, so that we can be real together. We can bring harmony to each other in this Sangha together. And I don't know about you, I don't think I'll ever be free from hindrances, and I'm not sure I want to be, because they are human and I'm human. They're real. And I hope they keep me humble, but I'll rely on all of you to let me know. But I can be aware of my particular hindrances. A big one is delusion. And practicing with them, I really open up the heart. Knowing we all have hindrances, and we always will, we can be aware of them. Some of them might diminish. One or two might actually go away. But I don't know, I turned 65 in October, so I've kind of given up thinking I'll be without hindrances. And yet I find that poetic image, feeling, language of our refuges incredibly inspiring. My intention to be without hindrances, I can sit with that, knowing that it's a lifetime job, and that is okay. And I'm going to take a moment to check my notes to see if I've said anything I wrote. I wanted to give an example of how we bump into each other and how we practice together to see those bumps and bring harmony. So I, for San Francisco Zen Center, I often will help members of the Sangha work through difficult conversations or conflicts. It's part of what I also have done in my profession. I'm mostly retired now. And this may seem very simple, but there was a difficulty that a crew head and a crew member were having, who worked pretty closely together. And the crew member felt that the crew head was correcting them in a pretty stern, harsh way. And the crew head was trying, new to the role, fairly new to practice, so was in kind of a difficult position. It's a complicated role. And they were bumping heads. And the particular style of the crew head, which could be kind of clipped, no, you do it that way, was really hard for the crew member. If she were from Brooklyn like me, probably would have been, you know, we're all different, right? And so the crew member got more and more upset and started, you know, we all tell stories. It's part of the that not reptilian part of the brain. What part of the brain is that? The amygdala, I think. Anyway, so the crew member was thinking the crewhead didn't like her. The crewhead thought she did a bad job all around. So we sat down together, and we started with talking about our vow to cultivate all good. And they are both such committed practitioners. And so they each shared what was going on for them. And the crew head was horrified at how the crew member was reacting. And the crew member realized how stressful this new role was for this fairly new practitioner as a crew head. And and it took a while, but they came to understand each other's experience and point of view. And I know there are still bumps because of just who they are. And yet because of their commitment to practice, to our precepts as a foundation, to the Eightfold Noble Path, right speech, right thought, right view. What's my point of view when I'm thinking these things about my crew head? That's how we create a living Dharma. That's how we cultivate a strong Sangha. And I'm going to bring this to a close in a few moments. I wanted to talk just a little bit about the LGBTQIA plus community and Sangha that I feel so deeply a part of, and how this is a difficult time. And so we need each other more. And part of what we do in our Sangha, at part of our intention, is to meet this moment as it is. And sometimes that's incredibly joyful. Sometimes it's pretty hard and scary. And yet if we don't meet this moment as it is, we can't move forward individually and together in a way that is meaningful, that might make a difference. And so Pride Weekend is such an, or Pride Month is such an opportunity to celebrate that we really have come so far, and to acknowledge that this is one of those very difficult times in our history as a community and a country. So how do we individually meet that moment and the reality of it? How do we as a community do the same thing? How do we as a Sangha support the different kinds of people that create our community? So I think I want to end with the words of Thich Nhat Hanh. So I invite you all to close your eyes. And I'm going to read this paragraph from The Heart of the Buddha's Teachings, The Three Jewels. Looking into any of the three jewels, you see the other two, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, inter are. If you look after the Sangha, you're looking after the Buddha. When your Sangha is happy and advancing in practice, the holiness of the Sangha increases, and the presence of the true Buddha and the true Dharma become clearer. When you walk in mindfulness, you are taking good care of the Dharma. When you make peace with another member of your Sangha, you are looking after the Buddha, going into the meditation hall, offering incense, and tidying the altar are not only ways to look after the Buddha, are not the only ways to look after the Buddha. Taking someone's hand or comforting someone who suffers is also to look after the Buddha. When you touch the true Sangha, you touch the Buddha and the Dharma. The Dharma cannot exist without a Buddha and a Sangha. How could the Dharma exist if there were no practitioners? A Buddha is a Buddha when the Dharma is in them. Each jewel contains the other two. When you are taking refuge in one jewel, you take refuge in all three. This can be realized in every moment of our life. Thank you so much. And dragons, let's have conversation, questions, comments.
Just something that came to me as you're speaking is, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist. Oops, sorry about that. And in my profession for many years, a couple decades at least, a lot of my practice was doing relationship therapy, couples therapy. And the data, and I haven't read the, you know, I'm not so up on the journals, so somebody else might contradict this, but the data that I was familiar with noted that couples with no conflict were more likely to divorce than any other kind. You just got so frustrated that you just walked out one day. You know, like I went to the store to get a pack of cigarettes. He used to say it never came home, you know. And so there's this balance between high, you know, high and unresolved conflict, and then this like zero because people are afraid, you know, the harmony will be disturbed. And I was also thinking, you know, in Asian culture, harmony is a super value. And that has its own issues. It can just like, it can be kind of weaponized. So I just kind of thought maybe you could comment on this, the role of difference and harmony, so to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. I like that question. Well, it also brings to mind in various sanghas I've been part of that there have been different practitioners who've come for a while. Some, I remember when I was practicing regularly at City Center as a student. I mean, I'm still a student, but but really doing practice periods. And there was this one person, from the moment he walked in the door, he was volunteering in the kitchen and setting things up in the zendo and practicing really hard, but not so much engaging with people beyond practice. And he became integral in terms of would do anything he was asked. And then he just disappeared. Gone. And I've seen that quite often. And I had occasion with someone who disappeared to have a conversation with them after they disappeared. And I imagine people have different reasons for disappearing. But it was because they were bumping into people and not really engaging beyond doing the dishes and helping to set things up in the zendo, which is really important. And so these bumps added up, and they disappeared. This individual just disappeared. And I thought, how sad, because I could feel their practice when they were coming regularly. So I think it's very hard, and it's something we need to improve on at Zen Center, to recognize our differences and how meeting each other in our differences, being open to, I'm having this reaction because this person's just different than me. We communicate differently, or, you know, they don't, there's something about them that's difficult for me. To not be open ourselves to those reactions and differences and kind of look at where they're coming from and develop the ability. You know, I think the Eightfold Noble Path is so helpful when we really deeply practice it to deal with each other. And I am sounding like a broken record. I know it's hard and it's scary. Most of us are conflict averse. Laughing with you, not at you. And I think we have an opportunity in practice because of our shared commitment to meet each other, even when it's bumpy. And there can be such strength in recognizing our differences. Like, I'll tell a quick story. One of my Dharma sisters who I was ordained with, we both have kind of strong personalities. And I joined this women's sitting group that she had organized. And this must be 25 years ago. And the first time we did a ceremony, she corrected me. And it really, really annoyed me. And I knew at least one of the corrections was wrong. I knew it. I knew it was wrong. I knew it. And then I annoyed her because I was so stubborn. And but we ended up actually talking about it. And we're very, very good, close friends now. As I said, we ordained together. And but it's just so funny to me that our first real interaction, shortly after I joined this sangha, we really irritated each other. And so I actually over the years have given her some honest feedback, which she hasn't always liked, but she's always appreciated. And occasionally she gives me that kind of feedback. It's true. I think it's really important. And I think my hope is we, as Sangha leaders, and not just us in these robes, but any of us can support another in meeting each other and being real. Does that answer your question?
It does. I have a further reflection, too, and that's that sometimes I feel in Zen sanghas and in relationships that people are afraid if they say anything that's not positive, that it's going to destroy the relationship. And it's just been my experience that it can deepen it.
Yes.
If it's done rooted in the Dharma, like you said. So thank you, Lisa. And I know there's other people.
I absolutely agree.
Would like to speak.
Any fire-breathing dragons here? Nina, right?
No, I'm Libby.
Oh, you're Libby.
Yeah, thank you.
There's Nina. Oh, you're Nina.
Yeah.
And you're, okay.
Yeah, just coming up for me, listening to that was, and to the other pieces that you shared in the talk, was making me think how, I can't remember what the situation was recently, that, you know, some difficulty with somebody else, and I was really processing my own stuff and, you know, sort of that back and forth between getting caught up in my point of view and then sometimes getting an insight about what was going on for me. And then at some point, finally, it broke through of like, oh, but they're another person and they have their own reality and they're just as human as me and they have their own vulnerability and their needs, you know, where they turn from an object to a subject. So, and sometimes that can be the thing that actually helps make the shift quicker. But sometimes it's impossible to really feel that if I'm very stirred up, then they just seem so much like a two-dimensional object that's doing something to me, you know. But yeah, I don't know, sometimes that sort of intention can help open up you know, sort of the whole thing can fall apart. I was just like, oh, right. You know, like this whole house of cards I was building about me and you know, how I'm so good or I'm so bad, you know, can just fall apart and open up.
Thank you. And it reminds me of the first 7 days scene that I've set. And Irina's in my sangha. Sorry, I think you've heard this story. First of all, it was really hard. And I was sitting next to this woman, and I just never met her, didn't say a word, 7 days at City Center, and I was convinced she didn't like me because of her energy. And I had a whole story about it, And then, you know, we always end sesshins with a meal, and she came up to me and she said, "You know, I really love sitting next to you this whole week. You have such great energy." And I was like, oh my, I don't remember what I said to her, but boy, was that a lesson in exactly what you're talking about, that you really don't know what's going on with someone until you hear from them. Hopefully they can tell you what's true. But I agree, Hogetsu. There's such fear at Zen Center and in Zen. There's such a value put on a certain kind of harmony and being kind. And as Hogetsu knows, one of my million favorite maxims is kind, not nice. Because sometimes I need to share with you something that's true that's going to be hard for you or both of us. And I can do that kindly. And to me, that's part of right or wise speech and right thought. And nice is, well, they probably have things going on, and I'm bigger than this anyway. I have my practice, you know, spiritual bypass, jumping into your higher self. So thank you, Libby. Yes. And then Bo.
Yeah, a lot of things about Hogetsu's question are live for me, too. Yeah, there's so much here. I mean, one thing is, you know, in American Zen and American Buddhism in general, I think there's some struggle between hierarchy and the kind of sanghas that we want, and that whole issue of like power and how do you deal with power and somebody that you put in a dominant position, and that also, you know, speaks to our larger society and what kinds of structures make people feel comfortable, and some people do seem to be more comfortable with the more authoritarian kind of community, and others don't. But I feel like we're all struggling collectively to figure that out. And I mean, one of the things I think is important about Pride Month is the recognition that, you know, we can be in a community with difference. And then there's a sort of balance between people going off into affinity groups and celebrating their own commonalities and people joining together in groups that allow for you know, expression of different ways of approaching gender, expression of, you know, just different ways of being human, and including maybe some of us who aren't so conflict avoidant as well as people who are. But it's in the whole problem of, you know, what kind of song is a multicultural pluralistic democracy.
I just want to check with you. I think what I'm hearing in your comment is both this is a shared exploration. How do you create this kind of sangha? And what's the balance between affinity groups, of which Zen Center for San Francisco Zen Center has many, and the whole Sangha body. Is that right?
That's part of it, yeah.
That's part of it, yeah. As well as how do you deal with, you know, Zen is a hierarchical institution. And so how do you deal with that? Especially if that's not something that you believe in, but perhaps the Zen teachings really resonate with you. I think that's a big part of what you were saying too. I think that's a really important point. I think when someone has positional power, it's really important to level the field. And part of that is being open to feedback and feedback that you may not like and may be true. And to roll up your sleeves and do what needs to be done with alongside the Sangha. And that's how I try to approach being in a position of authority or power in Zen. And I don't think I hide my warts too much. So I try to be really honest about my hindrances, that I don't expect to be perfect. And I want you to tell me when I'm not, especially if I've caused you hurt. I want to know. Otherwise, I don't grow. You know, I think when teachers are in sanghas where the message is, you know, don't bring this sort of thing up or to me, that's when real divisions grow. But,
And I think that's true for leadership in general and not just in Zen sanghas.
I have to warn you, though, if you bring something up with me, it'll probably end up in a Dharma talk.
Well, it's about learning, right?
It's all about learning, and that's what makes it a living Dharma. Yes? Okay, Bo? Oh, and then David. And then Howard.
You know, you asked the question of, are there any fire-breathing dragons, you know? And so since you asked that, you know, I've been like, I am that a little bit, you know, like, it's kind of manifested more since I've been teaching elementary school in the last 5 years or so. Not to say that I'm like raging through the days or whatever, but there's a kind of honesty to like the interactions with kids that draws out, for me at least, like the whole range of emotions in a day, which I appreciate, you know, and they're manifesting honestly in that way throughout the day. And I think it encourages me to as well. And you know, I read a thing from Thich Nhat Hanh actually, like, I don't know, a few years ago, where he proposed like, kind of two faces, and maybe this has to do with something that's like on the entrance of a you know, a zendo somewhere, but like, yes, a kind of calm face, but also when needed, like a fierce face. And I relate that to teaching where, again, I'm not like, you know, I really try to avoid like yelling in class and that sort of thing. But it's sometimes I do feel like I need to bring kind of a fierceness to the teaching, like a kind of energy, especially like, if it's like a situation of, you know, where a kid or the class needs some motivation, but like, or if there's like an instance of bullying, something like that face can be like, that's reality, you know, like in some way, like, hey, this needs to stop. You know, this is hurting someone else. And the calm is not necessarily like useful in the moment or whatever. So, I don't know, just that question brought that up to me. And also just the idea that, like, I think I've had in my mind, especially since practice or since starting practice however many years ago, like, calm is the thing, calm, calm. And of course, like, that's, I feel like in my heart, yes, calm is ultimately like a kind of precious thing. And that can be sort of weaponized in a way that, like Hogetsu talked about, you know, previously, like if you're kind of too hard on yourself for not being calm, or if you can't accept your own anger, when like right now, look, like anger is appropriate in a lot of ways, I think. It's like, or, you know, the precept is not to harbor anger, not to hold on to it, but it can be really useful as an energy, I think, too. And just be like, well, I'm just going to be calm through, for example, like a bunch of like what ICE is doing or whatever. That's not, for me at least, like appropriate. The fierceness, the anger, you know, the energy is human and like a I think an appropriate reaction if, right, again, it doesn't end up poisoning you or other people, if it doesn't become like a you know, kind of toxic thing, which the precepts I feel like help protect you against doing or whatever. So I know I appreciate the question, any fierce dragon. I haven't really heard that from a teacher before, and it's really helpful to be like, yeah, of course, like, yes, I have fierceness and fire in me, and that's okay probably too, right? So,
well, the Buddha did say to relate how you teach to who you're teaching, and I think you need a lot of different kinds of dragons to be an elementary school teacher.
Yeah, there are a lot of dragons in the classroom. So,
so we have David and Howard, and I think that's all we have time for, right? Yeah.
Thank you. What I was originally going to say somehow just went out the window because there's been so many good comments. But two things come to mind for me, and I want to share them with you and get your opinion on them, or three, actually. Fritz Perls, famous Gestalt psychologist, said everything's a projection. And oftentimes, when we're angry at somebody else, it's because we feel it inside. We know it. And we are that exact person. And we're just pushing. And they push our buttons, and they're reminding us of how bad we are, so we get angry at them. Because we don't want to say we're bad. You know, we're good guys. So everything's a projection. And I think when it comes to anger, and with Bo, what you're saying, what is the intent of the anger? Is the intent to harm, or is the intent to try to bring harmony? And so if our anger is geared towards judgmental and harm, there's going to be more conflict. But if our anger is toward, wait a minute, stop, take a look at what you're doing. Do you realize what you're doing and how harmful that could be to other people and to yourself? That's a different intention. And I think that's the key here. And, of course, we're all in Zen, so we're also trying to be, you know, calm and connected to everyone and connected to the universe. So if we, you know, if we get a little angry, oh, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be completely connected to the universe. So I think there's a dichotomy that we have to realize that that's not it. The universe is full of chaos, not always calm. So comments, if I...
Oh, I don't think I need that, but Howard will need that in a moment. I think with the question about projection, there's always stories that are evoked, I think, when we're angry or there's strong emotion, and it's important to be aware of them. And I would say it's important to look at what the heart of the situation is. Even if I'm projecting, the anger I feel might be because of feeling harmed by someone, or there's a real issue or problem there, a real difference that needs to be brought forward and dealt with. So I think it's really helpful to see what the stories or projections that are layered on are, because in my experience, both with myself and others, it makes it a lot harder to kind of unravel whatever the issue is. And if I can own, here's what I'm bringing to this difficulty, I think it can bring softening and open up the conversation. And I don't know about you all, but I'm not calm all the time. And the goal of our practice is to meet this moment as it is, including how what comes up within, and what do we do or not do with it?
That's what Darlene does when we that practice period study. She just meets the moment, no matter how frustrating it may be.
Yep.
Oh, the yogurt's gone. They took all the yogurt. What happened? I'm going to have my breakfast.
Yeah, that's a story from her book about looking forward to this wonderful breakfast, and then her family had eaten up all this creamy organic yogurt, and she was left with nothing. So she was very frustrated. Thank you. Howard, and then we'll bring this to a close and I think do some Kinhin. We've been sitting for a while now.
So I've had thoughts like four people ago, so I'm wondering where they went. I'll start here. For a long time, I used to, when I started in Zen for years, I was just like, I gotta be calm. I gotta like, this is what a Zen Buddhist looks like. And like, you know, really nice and empathetic and blah, 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 blah. And I just, the more I practiced, the more pissed off I got. And I was just like, I just have all these nasty, like brutish thoughts, like and feelings all the time. What the hell is going on? And I got so pissed off about it. I wrote a thesis about it. I was so passively aggressive trying to like take down this whole, like, you gotta be nice as a Zen Buddhist or something. Cause I just realized it was kind of bullshit. And like, granted, I think I still am like a relatively nice person or kind person or whatever, but like, I think something that's really been coming up for me as like from your talk, from the comments and everything is I keep coming back to karma. Cause like every time, like something comes up, it's like, oh, here it is again. All my ancient twisted karma, all my greed, hate and delusion. Oh my God. But every time I sit, every time I practice, I don't think it's linear, but it's every moment is like a repentance verse. Whoa. Over and over again. Just now I vow it, right? I remember years ago I'd get pissed off and think that somebody was like critiquing a way I was doing something in a ceremony or a ritual or something. I was like, oh, I'm terrible, or they think I'm an idiot, or fuck that guy, or whatever. And as something that's been sitting with me is that, Wade, the other day, you just came up to me very quietly and were like, the charcoal, the lit charcoal, is on the left side. And then you made the comment like, I thought you could handle that. I'm like, actually, yeah, I can now. I didn't say that to you, but that was my thought. I'm like, good on me, but also like, I really like didn't even experience it as a conflict thing. I experienced it like an act of love, actually. Oh. Like toward me, toward the Sangha, toward the Dharma's, like, this is how we do things. And that is all it is. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to see like the karma show up and then just, it was still there, but the seed wasn't sown that time. It popped up, but it wasn't sown that time. So the karma just kind of keeps coming back. Like the more I practice, I'm like, oh, this is, it keeps being reaped, but hopefully it's not being sown more.
Well, just remember one letter change and it's Dharma. Thank you all so much for a great conversation.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. We bow to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible. We surpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them.
Dharma.
Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to become it. Beings are numberless. We each vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.